Wintrust Business Lunch is up and rolling. Hi, it's John Williams. Hope you're having a good Friday. Here's Greg McBride, the Senior Vice President and Chief Analyst at Bankrate.com. Hey, how are you today, Greg?
Happy Friday, John. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
A strong jobs report, and everybody seems to be responding positively, right?
It's enough to put everybody in a good mood, yeah. I mean, this is more like it. This is kind of what we're looking for in terms of the job reports. Not only did it beat estimates for the month of July, but we saw, I think just as importantly, upward revisions to May and June numbers as well. So now when we sort of take a step back and look at it, we see job growth in excess of 900,000 2 months in a row, June and July. And we also saw a meaningful drop in the unemployment rate down to 5.4%. The employment to population ratio went up. So, that's a key metric just because there's been concerns that, not enough people are in the labor force, and the number of unfilled jobs. And I think that it maybe addresses that we're seeing some improvement on both of those fronts. A lot of open positions, but, a lot of jobs getting filled these last couple of months.
That's interesting if that's the trend and it continues, because we did it again today, a segment where people called in and said, I went there were not enough employees. And it was a lot of restaurants and fast food. And I noticed in the jobs report that government was number two in terms of new jobs, but it was leisure and hospitality that led the way, right?
It was. And, of course, that was the hardest hit during the pandemic. And I think as we've all experienced, there's still a lot of open positions in that area. Anybody who's, walked into a sandwich shop and seen, half as many people behind the counter and the line being twice as long, that's the kind of an epidemic right now. So a lot of business owners, a lot of employers that are struggling to meet the demand, consumer spending has really rebounded, and you're seeing some significant job growth in leisure and hospitality, but still a long ways to go. And still, as a sector, about 1.7 million jobs short of where it had been pre-pandemic.
Do you think this is going to continue, or are you worried that the different variants are going to knock it back again?
I have a little concern that the Delta variant, it's a recipe for uncertainty. So what happens in uncertainty, or I should say what doesn't happen when there's uncertainty? Businesses get a little more hesitant. They're a little more reluctant to kind of stick their neck out and hire and invest and take risks, right? They want to play things a little closer to the vest just to make sure. If we've been through these waves before, and there's been some evidence of the recovery slows a little bit during those periods of time. So I think that's a sort of a natural concern this time is, does the Delta variant throw a wrench in the recovery? Does it just slow the pace of improvement that we've seen? Does it take some of the momentum away from the job recovery that we're seeing? I think those are open questions that are going to be answered over the next few months.
Shy of that, though, what was driving this jobs report? Was it still stimulus monies trickling through, or was it the increased vaccination rates? Why did things get so good in July?
Well, I think it's a combination of a couple of things. You've got a lot of pent-up demand as things reopen. We'd had three rounds of stimulus, but the last one was in the spring. Where we saw job growth was very consistent with where the consumer spending is. And people are, we've seen a shift in the spending, a little away from goods, more towards services the past few months. And lo and behold, that's where you're starting to see, the really, the strongest job recovery and really what's carrying the torch. About two thirds of industries did see job growth during July, but it was very top heavy, particularly with the leisure and hospitality. But, we also saw growth in other services, too. So I think that's an indicator of just how and where the demand is, where consumers are spending. And a lot of that is just because, people are eager to get out and do the things that they haven't done very much of in the last year and a half.
So I'm looking at the one-month net change list. You probably have that in front of you, too, right? Leisure hospitality, 380,000 jobs. Government, 240,000 jobs. Professional and business, 60. Transportation, healthcare and social assistance, 47,000 jobs. Number five on the list, but not exactly leading the way. I would just think healthcare would be crushing it right now, and it doesn't look like it is. What's your thought about that?
Well, I think healthcare is kind of one of those, steady Eddie. We see pretty consistent growth in healthcare jobs, pre-pandemic as well, by the way, just that byproduct of an aging population. But, you know, that's one that, you know, it doesn't necessarily lead the way in terms of monthly job growth, you know, but as you look through the numbers, you know, it's one of those, it's kind of a slow, steady grower. I mean, if we were going to put it in stock parlance, it's kind of the, you know, blue chip that pays a nice dividend.
I saw at bankrate.com a piece that says three signs your investment portfolio needs a makeover. Okay, so where's your money? How are you planning a retirement? Here are three signs that you may need to rejigger things. Let's pick it up here in just a minute with Greg McBride, Senior Vice President, Chief Analyst at Bankrate.com. We're talking to Greg McBride from Bankrate. Greg, you guys put up a piece, three signs that your investment portfolio needs a makeover. What do I need to look for?
Yeah, this is a piece done by my colleague, Jim Royal, who does a lot of great investing content for us. You know, three signs that you might need a little bit of a makeover in your portfolio. You know, if the value of the portfolio never moves, or at the other extreme, it's too volatile. You know, could be time to introduce a little bit of balance into the portfolio. The other sign, if you've got too many bonds. Yes, bonds have done well as interest rates have come down, but you're getting very little in the way of income at this point, and you're exposed to pretty notable net price declines at the point where interest rates move up. I think that's another indicator that it might be time to rebalance and, you know, certainly add some stock exposure to an otherwise bond-heavy portfolio.
Well, it's easy to say it now, but boy, if we'd all just been dollar-cost averaging in stocks and equities for the last 4 years, we'd be in the cat seat. But that advice kind of doesn't change even today, even though you might think that a lot of the value has been taken out of the market. I talk to people who say they still see value in the market.
Well, if your time horizon's long enough, you know, you're not so worried about, you know, whether markets are, you know, fully valued, overvalued, you know, is there going to be a price correction? Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, one of the pieces of advice that Jim has in the article is invest in the market regularly. Adopt a long-term plan, put it on autopilot. And I think it speaks to, you know, what you were just saying about that dollar cost averaging. Put money in regularly, a broad-based stock market index fund, for example. Put money in on a monthly basis, have that automated. And over time, you know, particularly as you reinvest dividends, you can grow your nest egg significantly, you know, just by adopting, you know, those good habits and sticking with it over the long haul.
You're not saying zero bonds, are you?
No, not at all. I mean, bonds, I mean, they don't produce a whole lot of income at this point, but they do add some stability to the portfolio. You know, listen, when the stock market, you know, we will have at some point a correction. We'll have another bear market at some point. That's where having bonds in your portfolio pays off, because it you know, it does provide a little stability in a time where you're otherwise seeing volatility. But I think the risk you want to avoid is being too overly allocated toward bonds, particularly if you think of yourself as a conservative investor, because the wake-up call that could come is that when interest rates go up, you can see some pretty significant price declines in what you think is a safe investment.
So funny, isn't it? Because when the market was going down, when the pandemic started, I think a lot of us who felt like we're conservative investors, the last thing we wanted to do was put money in equities, but that would have been the time to do it, you know, plowing more money in as it was going down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when there's a you know, when there's a sale at the mall, you can't get a parking spot. But when the stock market goes on sale, everybody runs the other way. And so I think that's, you know, something as investors, we have to reorient ourselves. We have to recognize that over the long haul, we benefit if we're, you know, if we have the fortitude to buy in when the market pulls back, recognizing that, you know, these are the same holdings as we had a week or a month ago. They're just, you know, on sale and at a better price.
Can I ask you a couple questions about credit cards, by the way?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I got a credit card the other day, and it was the Capital One card, you know, the Jennifer Garner card. And I'd heard that was a pretty good card to get. I noticed that for the balance you carry, though, the interest rate on that is very high. And then somebody told me, don't worry about that because you're not going to carry a balance. How attentive should somebody be to the rate on a credit card?
Well, here's the fork in the road. Do you pay the balance in full every month without fail? If the answer to that question is yes, then focus on rewards cards. You know, this is an area where you can basically get a rebate for a portion of all of your spending. and you just pay the balance in full every month. You know, it's almost like a revenue share agreement between you and the card issuer. On the other hand, if the answer is no, that if you carry a balance on your card, even occasionally, forget about the rewards. You need to focus on minimizing your finance charges and getting that debt paid off as quickly as possible.
Sure.
Look for lower rate cards. And if you have an existing balance, search out one of those low rate balance transfer offers. Transfer the balance over. That can really be a nice tailwind towards debt repayment. We see some cards, if you have good credit, we see some of these balance transfer offers now, you know, 0% for, you know, 18 months. You know, that gives you a nice window to get that debt knocked out once and for all.
I'm making a major purchase. I have the cash on hand. So I'm still going to put it on the credit card and then immediately pay off the credit card and then capture the points. But now I'm nervous about having this high interest rate card in the drawer, so I have to resist any temptation to use it. How low a rate could somebody find on a credit card?
Well, some of these, you know, introductory offers for those that have good credit. You know, you mentioned the big purchase. There are cards out there that are offering that 0% rate, introductory rate on purchases that could last 12 to 18 months. So if you do have to buy an appliance, for example, you know, that could be an opportunity to, you know, mm-hmm. get some low, you know, zero rate financing on that. Just don't put any additional, you know, spending on that card. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to pile up a balance that's going to be too big to get paid off while you're carrying at the zero rate. Because what happens is when that introductory rate sunsets, the rate jumps to that normal rate of something usually in the mid to high teens, if not more. You don't want to be carrying a balance when that day comes.
If I carry a balance on this card I got, it's over 20%. It's well over 20%. I thought, hokey smokes. But I'll just have to be disciplined and not use it. Maybe I'll cut it up after I do this quick switcheroo. Are there some cards by name that you could tell us that you like?
Every issuer at this point has, almost every issuer at this point has some of these 0% balance transfer and purchase introductory purchase offers. I think a lot of this is you don't have necessarily have to look very far. It might just be, you know, looking for another card that your current issuer, has in their lineup. The hurdle you got to clear, you have to have really good credit. And you said the key word, discipline. Yeah, you have to have the discipline not to overspend. You have to have the discipline to pay the balance in full every month in order to really reap the benefits of the rewards and avoid the finance charges, because otherwise, you know, the interest rates are sky high. The average credit card rate right now is over 16%, and as you noted, there are plenty of them out there that, you know, have rates north of 20%, particularly for those that have weaker credit.
I wonder what the average credit card balance is these days. So I'll bet it's close to $10,000.
It's about six, across household. That's not per card. That's, you know, across the household. But, you know, I mean, that's, you know, that's years worth of payments. You know, especially if you're just making the minimum payment, that's just going to put you on a treadmill where it's going to take you a long, long time to get that paid off.
Greg McBride, Senior Vice President, Chief Analyst, Bankrate.com. Always a pleasure. Thanks for your help today, Greg.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio, produced by Pete Zimmerman. So good afternoon to you. It's 12:35. John Williams here. Let's talk a little bit. We did earlier about how the entertainment and hotel and restaurant industries are recovering. But, you know, it's a market-by-market affair. This is Michael Jacobson, the president and CEO of the Illinois Hotel and Lodging Association. Michael, thanks for joining us on WGN.
Hey, John. Happy Friday.
Yeah, likewise. I guess on a typical summer, the hotels would be bustling in Chicago and throughout the state. How are we doing as a state and as a city in Chicago?
Just to kind of give you a perspective, usually we're hovering around a 90% occupancy rate this time of year. We've been, over the last several weeks, hovering around 55%. So we're still about 35% lower than where we are during normal times. Last week was an anomaly. We ticked up to 65%, which is one of the highest rates we've seen week on week throughout the pandemic. But, of course, that was because of Lollapalooza. That's not something we could count on week after week. So we still have a long ways to go in terms of recovery.
Understood. How low did it get last year?
It was in the single digits some week during the peak of the pandemic. And that, of course, is because many hotels were shut down completely. Almost every one of our hotels is now back online and back open to the public. But the key demographic that's still missing is the business traveler. Of course, we're seeing leisure demand nationwide really bounce back quickly. People wanting to take vacations and get out again. You're seeing that in Chicago. But what is hurting us more than many other cities is the lack of convention travel, which is slowly picking up, and then, of course, business travel, which just hasn't come back as quickly.
You know, to that point, I noticed yesterday something. As you know, our studios are downtown, and I walk around the city all the time. And yesterday, I saw for the first time something I hadn't seen maybe since the pandemic started, and that was a group of coordinated people, maybe 50 or 100 of them with all matching lanyards. And obviously, they were part of some business strategy meeting, and they were having a break, and they were going somewhere, walking over the Michigan Avenue Bridge. I haven't seen that in a long time, but I used to see stuff like that all of the time. So, Michael, I'm hopeful that it's going to come back. I know you are too.
Yeah, that's the understatement of the century. I think when you look at Chicago, we're really the birthplace of conventions and conferences. We have one of the best and largest convention centers, not only in the country, but in the world. And that demographic is what we rely on in the hotel, and not only the hotel, but the restaurant industry as well in Chicago. And so I'll tell you that we're holding our breath, and that's why we're taking the precautions and protocols so seriously around protecting against the Delta variant, because our industry cannot afford to be shut down again. We can't afford for additional restrictions on capacity or things like that. So if it's worth implementing mask recommendations again, like many of our hotels have brought back mandatory masks, particularly for their employees to protect their team members, or if it's encouraging our staff and our guests to go get vaccinated, that's what we're doing, because if vaccinations lead to protecting our industry and protecting against future layoffs of our colleagues, I think that's something that everybody should not only worth considering for your own health and your family's health, but also for our economic well-being in Chicago.
What else can you do? I mean, you need for this pandemic to ebb, but shy of that, how else can you get people back into the hotels?
Yeah, one thing that we're monitoring closely, and we're starting conversations with city officials and state tourism officials, is what does the winter look like? Because again, 85 to 90% of our business right now is leisure travel, but even in normal times, let alone during a pandemic, come winter months, come November, December, that leisure demand dips considerably in Chicago, just given the weather. So we're having conversations around what innovative marketing looks like and what sort of packaging looks like with our restaurants, with our attractions, so that we can encourage even locals to do staycations related to the holidays and shopping. And one thing that's always kind of disappointed me is how many people I hear get on a plane and go to New York to go shopping for the holidays, when shopping on the Mag Mile or in the Loop is just as good, if not better. So we're going to have those conversations on how we try to preserve as much leisure demand, knowing that more and more companies are now starting to push back their return to the office or return to the road policies. I think you saw this week Amazon pushed theirs back to January 3rd. So we know that it's going to take slower for business to rebound. So we're trying to figure out how we can preserve leisure as long as we can, especially this winter.
And if that shopping takes place and lodging takes place in Oak Brook, you're happy with that too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a regional approach. I mean, obviously, if there's tax dollars that are generated through sales tax or hotel tax or restaurant tax in the suburbs, it of course helps boost the entire regional economy. So we're taking in credit to our partners at Choose Chicago and a lot of the other tourism bureaus throughout the Cook County and other suburban counties who have come together to have this regional marketing approach. So it's not just downtown Chicago. We're really looking at really the entire state, because our entire state is still lagging behind other states in terms of their recovery.
How are hotels pricing the rooms then? I mean, maybe if you discount it too much, it still doesn't get a business traveler back out there. So you want to get every dollar you can. How are they managing that?
Yeah, that's where. So if you look at our revenue is still the biggest metric that's lagging the most. And that's because rates still haven't fully rebounded. And of course, occupancy hasn't. But if you're trying to stay downtown on the weekends, rates are pretty comparable to where they were in 2019. In most cases during the week, those rates come down a bit, but there's still discounts to be had in terms of taking a weekend trip downtown and spending the weekend down with your spouse or your family. So there's definitely discounts to be had. I think you'll start seeing that continue, especially as we approach the fall and winter months. I will tell you the rate has definitely rebounded as to where we were at a year ago. I mean, there were some rock bottom rates at the peak of the pandemic, and those days are behind us, but they still haven't recovered 100%.
You shoot me a couple of numbers, like what are rates I could expect in the city or suburbs or Springfield, anywhere right now?
Yeah, so just to give you perspective, last week's average daily rate, which is our key metric, was $224. That's compared to $231 in 2019. So again, there's a slight gap there, but that was also an anomaly week because of Lollapalooza. I think we're usually about 10-15% less than where we were in 2019. That's been the trend we've been witnessing statewide.
So if I'm looking for a staycation downtown Chicago, I ought to be able to find a nice room in a nice location for under $200 a night.
Yes, that's usually shouldn't be a problem, again, as long as it's not a weekend where we have Lollapalooza, but of course that only happens once a year, so that usually shouldn't be a problem, especially as the summer continues, because especially when kids go back to school, again, you're going to start seeing the demand go down a little bit, and that's something we expect.
And that Lollapalooza thing was funny, wasn't it? I guess you were watching that maybe from the sidelines, happy to have the customers, but also aware of how tenuous the wisdom can be on something like that. Maybe it was too much, maybe it was too soon. I mean, it's a tough call, isn't it?
It's a tough call, and I mean, credit to the mayor and Dr. Arwady and City Hall for finding that balance between protecting our residents and protecting our economy. Hopefully, again, with the protocols in place, working with the Lollapalooza organizers, working with our hotel properties, we're confident that we took every step possible to protect our visitors. And hopefully that turns out to be the case with the data and the metrics. But I think that is a precedent that needs to continue to be followed for future events of, let's be real, COVID is going to be with us for the rest of our lives in some capacity, hopefully not seeing surges like what we're seeing right now, but we need to continue finding that balance between economic well-being and, of course, nothing's more important than our health and safety. So striking that balance is something I think you witnessed last week, and hopefully we continue to witness.
Yeah, no kidding. You may have it there, Michael. That is, we've learned to live with the flu. And so maybe, you know, in the best case scenario, there's no magic. We're not going to make it go away forever. But if we can suppress it and manage it the way we do the flu. One last question, though. So if I'm going to a hotel in Chicago or the suburbs this weekend or next, if I'm planning something at the end of the summer, maybe I should be prepared to be asked to wear a mask. Would you agree with that?
I think you should be prepared. Again, we're in constant communication, almost daily communication with IDPH, CDPH to figure out what the latest kind of mandates and recommendations are. Of course, we always follow those local guidelines, but you are hearing some hotels even go several steps further, and particularly for our staff. Again, we want to make sure our team members are kept healthy more than anything else. So I think it's going to be an ever-evolving situation, and we're going to see where this goes. I think that's the name of the game these days.
Michael Jacobson's the president and CEO of the Illinois Hotel and Lodging Association. Find out more about them from illinoishotels.org. Okay, Michael, good luck to you all. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
The business news continues on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Getting vaccinated against COVID is going to be a requirement for employees of United Airlines. The announcement makes United the first major carrier to enact such a policy. All of United's 67,000 U.S. employees will have until October 25th to get their shots or run the risk of losing their jobs. John Deere is buying autonomous driving technology startup Bear Flag Robotics for $250 million. The Moline-based Deere is betting that farming will become more automated. Deere has been working with Bear Flag since 2019. The company develops autonomous driving technology that's compatible with existing machines like tractors and combines. Manufacturing and industrial giants like Deere and Caterpillar appear to be recovering from the COVID-related downturn and supply chain issues. Second quarter financial results show sharply rising sales, profits and an optimistic outlook for the future. Cranes reports local industrial firms are benefiting from pent-up demand for everything from airliners to tractors. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander's away today, the business of food with Ryan Burrow.
Festivals are a staple of the summer. They also come with a lot of waste, food, packaging, utensils, all tagged for landfills. But Seven Generations Ahead is trying to change that. For the 14th year, the not-for-profit, which focuses on reducing food waste, is hosting the Microbrew Review in Oak Park.
You know, our goal is to have it be 95% and above zero waste, as close as we can get.
Dozens of brewers and restaurant vendors will gather August 21st with the goal of pouring out brews, dishing out food, while keeping the garbage cans empty. Gary Kunin is founder of Seven Generations Ahead.
We'll have bins for food scraps and anything that's compostable, and then a bin for recycling. And we have volunteers set up across the fest that will kind of instruct people what to put where. As far as the brewers are concerned, they're serving their beer in 5-ounce reusable glasses that people can take home as souvenirs.
Pete Crowley is owner and brewer of Haymarket Beer Company.
The amount of waste it takes just to make a cheeseburger is unbelievable.
Every year, he and his team have learned something new from Seven Generations Ahead about reducing waste.
First time, we actually brought our own trash can. Like, how dumb is that? Everything we brought was wrapped in saran wrap, and all we did was unwrap it and throw it out. And now it's like, use the washable containers with plastic lid. Remember when I got yelled at about straws, Gary?
We've all made mistakes. It's about being on a learning curve and encouraging people and just pointing things out when they need to be pointed out.
There is a competition too, a little bit. You know, we jive each other like who can produce honestly the least amount of stuff at the end of the day.
And Pete's able to bring that knowledge on reducing waste back to his restaurant.
On what we order for utilizing, you know, to-go packaging and things to make sure it is compostable and it's made of recycled products. And are the straws eco-friendly?
You can find out more information on the 14th annual Microbrew Review and reducing your own waste at 7generationsahead.org. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Look who else is back to business. It's the Uptown Art Week. And on a phone line to tell us about it is Martin Sorge. Hi, Martin. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Executive Director of Uptown United and the Uptown Chamber of Commerce. ExploreUptown.org. So today is day one. Am I looking at this right?
It is. Uptown Outreach starts today and runs through Sunday the 15th.
What are we looking at then? Is it like it has been in the past? Is it changed? What's going on?
Yeah, this is the second year. This is a new event we started last year as a way to have an event for those of us who don't want to be in big crowds. So it's spread out all across Chicago's Uptown neighborhood. We'll have more than 40 new murals being painted. Local businesses and organizations are doing art-related activities or showings or sales in their businesses. And we also have the first ever Uptown Art Fair coming up this Sunday.
So only 2 years? I had it in my mind that this had been going on a lot longer.
Nope, it's brand new. Last year, we had to cancel some of our big festivals and in-person events, and we wanted to do something that would bring people outside, get to experience our neighborhood without, you know, having to be close together, during the pandemic. So it was a big hit with the neighborhood, and so people said, hey, bring this back every year. So here we are, and it's bigger and better than ever.
Time Out is labeled your neighborhood as the 24th coolest neighborhood in the world, which is an interesting distinction. That's very good. I didn't know they broke it down that fine. And then it's live mural painting. Do I go to see the mural painted or do I hang out and watch them do it?
Yeah, so you can see we have an interactive map on our website that shows you which murals are being painted this weekend. So we actually have even some artists out right now painting murals anywhere from the size of about 4 feet by 4 feet to murals that are 3 or 4 stories tall. So you'll see some that are being painted and will probably be painted for several weeks and some that'll just go up in one day. Plus, we have more than 150 pieces of public art that already exist in the neighborhood. So you can kind of take yourself on a self-guided tour, pop into a restaurant, grab a coffee, get a drink, do some shopping, all while enjoying all the great public art we have in Uptown.
A lot of times, though, art fairs, though, and art weeks are the almost retail sale, maybe on the street, maybe in a park, of works of art. Are you that as well, or it's more these murals?
Yeah, it's so all week long, there are murals and activations at local businesses. But this Sunday from 10 to 2, we're having an art fair where artists will be popping up near the corner of Broadway and Wilson in Uptown, and we'll have an art fair where some of them will be selling their pieces of public art. We'll have a DJ, and that is just this Sunday from 10 to 2.
So if you're not familiar with that area, I'm just imagining it in a map in my head. It's not too far from the lake on Broadway, and it's a little north of Wrigley Field and just a tiny bit east, right?
Yep, exactly. You can get off right at the brand new Wilson CTA station and get off at Lakeshore Drive. Really easy to get to. Tons of street parking if you need that. And a great day to explore the neighborhood. It runs for a whole week. So hopefully you'll find a day with good weather and you can come walk around. And there's some great art near the lakefront as well.
I'm looking at the website and the links. So you've got by address. I mean, you could just click on and just check out any of these at your leisure, right?
Yep. It's, all across the neighborhood. You can, go up to Argyle Street and see some of the, we have five new murals going up there. You can get some great Vietnamese food, Chinese food. You can come to kind of the heart of Uptown. We have a street called Clifton Avenue. There's one block. It's kind of a small, narrow street where we have basically there's art every 5 feet or so. So it's kind of a on-street art gallery.
I love the food on Argyle Street. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and art throughout. So it's the Uptown Art Week. It starts today. The address and all the information you need is easy to find. Go to exploreuptown.org, exploreuptown.org. Good luck and well done. What a great idea. Thank you, Martin.
Yep, thanks for having me. I hope to see some of you out there.
Martin Sorge, Executive Director, Uptown United and the Uptown Chamber of Commerce.